Hello and welcome to another exciting and jam-packed episode of Modern Day Philosophers. I'm your host, I'm Danny LaBelle. I hope you're doing well. I hope you're having a good week. I'm doing okay. I'm trying to remain positive, not let the forces in the universe pull me down. And I'm putting up a pretty good fight, and I'm holding my own. Sometimes it comes easily, but sometimes you got to put up a fight. And I could feel it. I could feel it. The depression trying to get me, and I'm saying, no way. I'm going to keep being productive. Keep distracting myself from it. Keep trying to move forward. I went to Lowe's with Kylie, and we got materials, and I started building a chicken coop for our little chicken Sonia in the backyard. So that's cool. I tried to buy one first in the valley, but I couldn't fit it in the car, and I figured, hey, how tough can it be? And it's a little bit tough, but I'm doing it, and happy to do it. Chickens are great pets. They're one of the only pets that gives back. You know, you feed your chicken. Chicken says, all right, I'll feed you. And they give you something back. How many pets do that? Does your dog do that? Does your cat do that? No, they don't. Most they'll do is shit on your lawn. And a chicken will do that too. But they'll also say, hey, here's an egg for your troubles. Thank you, sir. Be on your way. And the eggs are so damn good. So much better than the eggs in the store. Makes you wonder. Makes you wonder what's going on with those other eggs. Because these are much eggier eggs. You say, how can one egg be eggier than another egg? Well, you're just going to have to take my word for it. These are eggier eggs. Much eggier eggs. By the way, I redid the website, moderndayphilosophers.net. I did it on one of those template things and arranged it and designed it myself. I think it came out pretty good, pretty slick looking. I hope you agree. If you have any suggestions or ideas, please email me at thecomical@yahoo.com, or if you just want to give me some feedback, I'd love it, because it took me like 20 hours to do it, and I'd love some feedback. There's a donate button, you might notice, a donate button on that website. Feel free to use that too. It's always much appreciated. If I get a donation, then I am happy. I keep living. Keep living life. Keep making podcasts. I'm doing it all from listeners like you. Listeners like you, go on to the site. Today's episode is brought to you by a brand new sponsor who I reached out to because I heard about their product and I loved the idea. And they sent me some samples and I tried them and they worked. And I was like, all right, I hope you guys will advertise on the show because I believe in the product and I think it can be big. I want to be part of the growth of this. And I can't believe that nobody else thought of this, but it's brilliant. It's called Drinkwell, and that's spelled D-R-I-N-K-W-E-L with one L. And Drinkwell believes the world is full of healthy people who still like to have a good time, which is why they created the first multivitamin for people who drink alcohol. As soon as I heard about this, I was like, that is awesome. I hope they advertise, and they are. When you drink alcohol, alcohol depletes your body of essential vitamins and nutrients. By the way, for a Scottish Jew, this is the perfect product to be a spokesperson for. This is part of what makes you feel bad the next day when the body is depleted of all its vitamins from the alcohol. Drinkwell is formulated to replenish lost nutrients, support healthy liver function, process alcohol-induced toxins, and generally help you feel better the next day. And you might be saying to yourself, I don't know. Don't know about that Drinkwell. Feeling a little skeptical here today. Feeling a bit skeptical. They say, skeptical? Yeah, skeptical. Skeptical, you say? Yeah, skeptical, I say. Well, then check out the reviews on Amazon.com, says Drinkwell. That ought to take care of that skeptical. If it doesn't work for you, by the way, you just email the people at Drinkwell and they'll send you a complete refund, including shipping. No product to send back, no forms to fill out. You can pretty much rip them off if you want to. They're saying, scam us. We're Drinkwell. Look, don't scam them. Don't scam Drinkwell. But check out this product because it worked. It's great. I had a bunch of drinks, had some whiskey, took some Drinkwells, felt great the next day. And my body, it's breaking down. Hopefully I'm going to reverse that, but you know, it's tough for me drinking these days, and I thought, oh, hopefully I get a product that I don't wake up feeling like crap the next day, and this Drinkwell really worked. You go to drinkwell.com. That's Drinkwell with one L, and use promo code MDP, short for Modern Day Philosophers, for 15% off. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. The product is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure, or prevent any disease. DrinkWell does not prevent intoxication, alcohol poisoning, alcohol abuse, or utter stupidity. It's not a hangover cure, but it'll make you feel a lot better in the morning. So go get some drinks. And when you drink, make sure you drink well. Drink your beer, drink your wine, then have some drink well and you'll feel fine. Go to drinkwell.com. All right. Our other sponsor has sponsored the show before. She's a wonderful listener, Rachel Murray, who has the website consultmurray.com. You go to consultmurray.com, you're going to see very funny pictures and adventures that she... Well, one of her characters is Shinobi that she brings to all these different places. And there's a picture on the homepage right now with me and Kylie from when we met up with her, or Kylie and I, when we met up with her in Seattle and we met Shinobi. And they're really funny and they're really creative and they're great. And I'm incredibly grateful to Rachel, not only for sponsoring the episode, but for her friendship that was made through this show. And Rachel is currently taking care of her mom full-time in the house, who suffers from Alzheimer's. And it's a very tough thing. And she has mentioned to me that if there's anybody else out there who's going through or has gone through anything similar, she would very much appreciate the support from you. Because, well, that's part of what makes it great to be a human being. It's one of the good things you can do is reach out to somebody else and make their day a little better and support them. And if you understand what they're going through, or even if you don't and you want to reach out and say hello and say, "Hey, Rachel, I love the website. I love consultmurray.com. And how you doing?" I would recommend you do so, because she's a very sweet and wonderful person. Go to consultmurray.com today. All right. Without further ado, I am now going to present to you my talk with my good buddy, Sean Latham, who I met when I was touring with Ralphie May and he was touring with Gabriel Iglesias. And we've stayed friends for a very long time. And he's just a wonderful, awesome guy. And well, here you go. You can hear for yourself right after the intro song. Enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to Modern Day Philosophers.
Modern Day Philosophers.
Having failed to pay attention in school, Danny Lobel, now older and wiser, will attempt to learn basic philosophy 101. Our young hero will be joined by today's top comedians, philosophers all their own. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Danny Lobel.
Modern Day Philosophers.
I'm here with my friend Sean Latham.
What's going on, Danny Lobel?
How you doing, Sean?
It's good to be here.
Good to have you here.
LaBelle House Productions.
What do you think? Do you like it?
I love it. I love it. It's great.
It's exciting when I get to have on a friend of mine who I have a long time friendship with. I'd say that you and I, in comedy years, it's a long term friendship.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say that. Yeah. And it's over different geographical areas.
Yes.
As well.
Yeah. We've been bi-coastal friends. We've met in different parts of the country as friends.
And here now, before you were, you know, dead set and deep rooted in New York.
Yeah.
Now here you are, the sweet office above the LaBelle Manor and the LaBelle production office.
Welcome to LaBelle Manor.
I like it.
I hope you find yourself most comfortable here.
I love that the butler came.
Yeah.
You know, it was nice. It was really delicious.
People don't know how classy I live here at LaBelle Manor.
And I'll be honest, the wonderful espresso here.
Oh, yes. The espresso really at nice. LaBelle Manor is amongst the finest. And the duck and pheasant parfait. I don't even know what a parfait is. What is a parfait?
A parfait is a dessert that Dairy Queen makes.
So it makes no sense.
A parfait. That's a dessert at Dairy Queen.
So it made no sense.
No,
not at all. Confit. Confine? Well, confit?
I think that it was that your subconscious was saying that after you would eat a good meal, you would prefer to eat a delicious dessert.
Good save.
Duck and parfait.
Yeah, I
so
like
I think
that.
You're actually on track.
You really saved me there. Do you want to be buried with any stuff, by the way, when you die?
Do I want to be buried with anything?
Or do you want to just be just you?
I never thought of it. I don't know. I don't think I want to be buried with nothing.
Yeah, me neither. I don't want anything.
Yeah, I think I'll be good.
It's so funny. It's just the difference of one day. Within one day, I want a lot of stuff, and then if that day I die, I want nothing.
Yeah. I played the stuff game long enough.
Yeah.
You know, the stuff game has me wrapped up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a stuff guy.
Right.
I got a lot of stuff. Look at my backpack's full of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't want more stuff.
You carry around a lot of stuff.
There's a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah.
And I definitely want to release that burden once my time's up.
What if you pretend to be dead for a day? Just have no stuff for one day. Do you think you could do it?
No stuff?
No stuff.
Tough call. I can do
You're
no stuff
such
one
a
day.
Stuff guy. Like, knowing you, you just have so much stuff. You have stuff that people don't even know exists.
I don't even need that stuff, some of it.
You have, I remember you had a lens that attached to your iPhone.
Yeah.
That's extra stuff because your iPhone has a lens.
Yeah. And I actually, I lost that in a drunken stupor in a European tour.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a pretty tough loss. I had a bag of awesome stuff.
Yeah.
Which those lenses happened to be in.
Okay.
Got hammered in Nottingham with some of these youngsters. These kids are just like getting, the one day I went really big.
You got Nottingham hammered.
I got Nottingham hammered.
Okay.
Got booted out of Nottingham McDonald's later on that night. Hotel, next morning, rushing around trying to get my shit together to get out.
Mm-hmm.
Left a bag of stuff.
Now, was this when you were touring with Gabriel or was this solo Sean?
This was on the Gabriel tour through Europe, 2012. End of 2012.
It's pretty wild. Like, you and I have both toured with big comedians.
I know.
And
it is. Such a difference.
Yeah.
From the real world.
It's weird to go back to our lives, right? It's like, no, you just get to walk into a different world for a minute, and then you leave, and you're like, oh, wait, I'm back to small-town problems?
Yeah. It's like, okay, this is what it's like if I ever make it.
Yeah.
This is what it's like when you make it. And then you get to get a little taste for a while, this is the made it life.
Sometimes you get invited into another life even for an hour. Somebody thinks you are more than you are or mm-hmm. something like that, or it's an event.
Yep. A lot of different rooms too, comedy rooms where they never have comedy and then you do have a really good set.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of hold you at a standard of you guys to almost ridiculously out of control. It's like, I'm just a dude that happens to be funny. I've been working on this for a while. You know, if you've been working on, as a plumber for 15 years,
Yeah.
You're going to be a badass plumber. So you don't just think this because suddenly walk in and do the most amazing plumbing job that they're the baddest person on earth.
Right.
But I guess that's one of the cool things about comedy.
Yeah, because there's no, like, I think there's specific plumbing training. What are you looking at? You keep looking at
something. I have a lazy eye.
Oh, so you're not looking at anything?
No, he does his own thing.
Oh, okay. I thought you were looking at something.
No, he's a free spirit.
I knew you had a lazy eye, but I didn't even trust it. I thought you were still looking at something else.
Yeah, well, I rely on that to get myself out of situations from time to time.
So you are focused on me?
Yeah. Good eye.
You promise? Number one. How do I know? I don't keep good track of which one's your lazy eye.
Well, that means that your dominant eye is probably your left eye because half the world gets it. So I've kind of figured out that people with a right dominant eye are the ones that don't really see it as opposed to people with a left dominant eye. Because your left dominant eye would want to connect to my right eye, mm-hmm. but that's my lazy eye. This is just what I think from having a lazy eye for this many years.
How many years have you had it?
Roughly 34.
So you've had it your whole life?
Yeah. So it didn't happen like in a freak horse accident or something.
It didn't just get lazy one day.
No.
Like, hey, come on, eye. Come on, wake up.
It's a life commitment.
Well,
to laziness.
The lazy eye is a good segue because your philosopher today is Thomas Reed. Thomas Reed and Alex, who picks out the philosophers, said what they have in common is Sean has a lazy eye, and this philosopher talked about perception. Reed believed that how we perceive knowledge affects how we behave morally. When we philosophize about morality, we get a proper outline on how we behave. All we need to do is act it out. That being said, we cannot forget that our senses are subjective and the information we are receiving may not be agreeable to other moral philosophers. He uses the term sensus communis, common sense, to explain the phenomenon of shared reason. Philosophical reasoning requires certain underlying tenets, like the laws of physics are true. The presupposition of these truths is not rational, but based on faith in the laws of the universe. Because of this, he says, the ability to use common sense is the difference between the sane and the insane. Hmm. So common sense is only common to the sane, I guess. You know, the insane don't have the common sense. They have uncommon sense. I guess, like, if you have a group of people who are insane in the same way, and they're all in a room together, then they're probably sane, right? Amongst themselves.
Well, in that circle, that's where the level of morality is. If that group of people has decided that they have their own version of what is realistic or right or wrong. And it's all, you know, it's the same as religion or anything. It's, well, what were you taught when you were little? That this is bad,
yeah.
Or that this is good.
And I guess that's also geographic, like where you grow up influences the opinions and all these. I mean, I know you're Mexican, right?
On the weekend? Yes.
But did you grow up in Mexico or did
no,
you?
No, hell no. No. I didn't know. My dad's side's Mexican. I didn't even know what I was. I'm very separated ethnically with myself because I didn't grow up Mexican. I didn't know what the hell I was. I'm part Italian, a little German. I'm a big mix up. Mainly, I sound white. White American meaning, you know.
So do you feel like you don't connect to like other Mexicans as much as they might connect with each other?
Oh, I definitely know that. But, you know, it's not that I don't connect with them. It's just that right off the bat, it becomes a personal thing. It's like, okay, well, how do you connect? I'm one of them, but I'm not one of them. You know?
Right.
Because I'm really not. I mean, I speak Spanish, but not fluently.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't grow up with a Mexican, inside of a Mexican family. I didn't even know I was Mexican until I was 15. Or I had that part of me, at least, my dad's side.
Really? You didn't know?
I had no idea. Me and my brother had different dads, and I thought we had the same dad. And his dad was white. He was
wow.
a drummer in a band. And they got divorced when I was 3.
And you thought that was your dad?
Yeah, until I was 15.
You've been deceived for so many years.
Yeah, and then the only difference was once I found out who my dad was and I met him and I had a whole like family reunion experience on that side, it just answered all the questions I didn't even know I had. And then I'm, you know,
like
at this
questions
point,
like what?
Just the differences of my personality, you know, the quirkiness, even the hair, like everything was, I walked into a group of me's, you know? Oh, this is where I'm from. These are the people that are
group of
life.
Me's.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was, and I never met them, ever.
I love that.
I walk into this huge room and it's a bunch of me's. And it was really crazy.
Did you be like, oh, okay, so the identity that I formed already matched this? Or were you thinking like, oh, I'm so different than them. I'm so different than everybody. I'm really, truly an individual.
You know, there was both. I am truly an individual, but also I learned that personality is a very large DNA quality. It's just from DNA. There's a lot to do with your DNA. I mean, your personality that's embedded in your DNA. You know, like, I didn't know any of them. A lot of them knew who I was. They just didn't give a shit for the longest time. My dad knew who I was. You know, he didn't give a shit, you know. So outside of that,
he didn't care that he hadn't seen you in 15 years.
He pretended, and he probably did deep down, but not enough to really give a fuck. You know, like I don't talk to any of them now. I'm 35.
You don't talk to your mom or your dad?
I talked to my mom. Yeah, of course.
Did it affect how you trusted your mom because she'd been lying to you for 15 years of your life about something so deeply personal?
You know, I thought at first it might, but then I kind of accepted that, you know, she was just like trying to give me. Instead of me growing up and not and having all these questions and thinking I was unaccepted because this guy doesn't want nothing to do with me, I just had, at least I got to feel the fulfillment of, oh, well, you know, this guy, my brother's dad, because we did visit him and stuff like that. But
you did visit your actual father?
No, my brother's dad.
Okay.
And he played along too. So, and then I was just like, you know, she's kind of protecting me. I see it, you know, I mm-hmm. see the mentality. Then I was 15, and she just finally told me, you know, which is about the right age. And I was like, all right, I get it.
So you were never angry about it?
No, not really. I mean, I guess you don't know what you're not missing out on, I guess, right?
Yeah, I guess. Were you not angry at your real dad?
I was for a little while. For what, though? I mean, it's not like he was ever there to begin with, so it's not like it was a severed relationship.
Right, you didn't lose anything that you didn't have.
Yeah, so... You know, we were cool for a little while, and then that just is like, nah, that ain't working out, you know?
Huh.
He starts telling you shit like, stop with them jokes. Well, I made it to Comedy Central. Can I do it now? Do I get your approval now, Mr. Electrician? You know,
yeah.
That's how the mentality was at the point when 10 years ago when I stopped talking to him.
So he, like, wasn't there for you at all, and then he was trying to tell you how to live your life and that, yeah, you can't do that. You can't just jump in and assume like the disciplinary roles without the other shit. That's not cool.
Yeah, there's no you can't have a corporate merger, you know, in a human life, you know. You can't just show up and just start changing things because you bought the company out.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, that's how almost how he looked at it. They showed up. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get rid of the whole comedy section of this company. Going to get you a work truck. You're going to start working on electric. That's what we do now. This is what it's like a radio station changing genres.
Yeah. Were you pissed off when you walk into the room of Mies that the Mies let you down?
No, you know what? Because they, for most of them, wasn't their business. You know, like if it's aunts or cousins, I mean, like think about if you had a brother-in-law or something, or a brother or a cousin that had an illegitimate child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not going to like go get in his grill and be consistent on forcing him to be in that person's life, you know?
Yeah.
Just to, and this is also in the 80s. Like I'm born in 78, so I'm pretty sure my dad just tore up my mom. Here I show up, you know? She had met somebody else, found out she was pregnant. He said, you know, fuck it, I'll take care of this kid.
Yeah.
Like he's my kid. So that's why I got his last name, Latham.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, and then that she didn't work out. And my dad was just getting hammered, I guess, you know, doing his thing, Rolling Stone status.
Yeah.
In the 80s, you know?
I keep talking about the 80s like they were the 60s.
The 80s, like, there's a different mentality. People were doing a lot of crazy drugs. They were still, I mean, not like the 60s, but with that free spirit feel.
You know, those wild 80s.
But I mean, they were getting hammered. You know, California people getting loaded.
Yeah, yeah.
Not giving a shit, thinking the world's going to end in the year 2000, you know?
Right.
Like, their mentality of, that's why metal, you know, metal started rocking hard in the 80s because everybody started giving zero fucks and wanted to yell at people and...
Well, that's a good point. You know? Yeah. Do you think the rise of metal was directly a response to Y2K fear?
No, but I'm sure it had some... I definitely say no, but I definitely feel that, you know, it was like really coming into your own time period where you're like, I'm not going to follow the system you guys are trying to push on us after... Because 60s and 70s, you know, shit's crazy. You know, look, mm-hmm. it does its thing as far as self-exploration, you know, and you know, fighting the man type status, and then you just roll into the 80s. There's nothing, you know. Well, now what? The 70s are over. The diseases start coming into play, but people are still partying their ass off.
Uh-huh.
So they were. I think there's a lot of anger coming out after, and this is all solely based off made up hypotheses in my own head.
Right.
There's no actual factual backing. I mean,
it might just be you justifying your dad being a shitty dad.
A piece of shit. Yeah. So. You know.
It's the 80s, man. Everybody was running out on their
kids. The 90s sounded like the future, like the real time, the future sounded like the future.
Yeah.
The 90s. That sounds futuristic. People in the 80s want to deal with the 90s
and
then dying in 2000 when the world blows up.
He's like, the kid's going to be dead with the rest of us in the year 2000.
I don't have any kids. I don't know if there's anything subconscious to do with that. But
you think you'll ever have kids?
I can't say no or yes. You know.
Do you have any desire to have kids?
I do, but... Not enough to drop the commitment that I've already given my life at this point in this game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be like everybody else doesn't have children until they have children. And it's the best thing in their life ever that I didn't realize this is what I needed in my life. You know,
right.
I could be that guy if I did have a kid. Maybe I don't know me with, you know, a post kid.
Yeah.
So
post kid, Sean,
I don't know me post Sean kid, post kid, Sean, me after I have a child.
I imagine you'd have more stuff.
Yeah. Then the kid's going to have stuff and then I'm going to have stuff for the kid.
Yeah, your stuff, the kid's stuff, your stuff for the kid, and so that's three layers of stuff.
Yeah, that's three layers of stuff.
And then if there's...
The mother,
yeah.
That's a whole other level of stuff. So I guess
it's all... And then the stuff that she has for the kid.
Philosophically speaking, this is all about stuff.
Yeah. Were you raised here on the West Coast?
I was raised everywhere. Born in L.A., moved to back to Ohio, where my mom was from. That didn't work out. Moved to Alabama with her then husband at the time. That didn't work out real fast. Moved back to L.A. with my grandparents, me and my mom, you know, retreat mode after the divorce. And then from there, a few years and back in L.A. and then to South Carolina for about 4 years. And then this is all before 15.
Wow.
And then at 15, Arizona, stayed there for 10.
And that's when they dropped the bomb on you. You have a different dad. Welcome to Arizona.
Well, it was right before going there because I have some fucked up cousins. And my mom was like, I don't want you finding this shit out. you know, the wrong way. So let's have a sit down.
What do you mean fucked up cousins? What's fucked up about them?
More 80s, more product, more children of the 80s.
Damn 80s cousins.
Just coke, meth.
I'm a product
police
of the 80s.
Chases. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, Los Angeles in the 80s was a drug, was just running rampant with people doing crazy shit. Coke, you know, just going ham, you know, thinking there's, and I just, funny, because I just had one of my cousins who was one of the people that my mom was would fear that would break the news to me that I had a different dad than I realized.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in jail often his whole life, you know, and but he's out now, you know, like 2 years going good. And I hung out with him for the first time at Christmas in well over 10 years, which was kind of different, you know.
Yeah.
Because I was just like, dude, you used to lie to me all the time. You used to, you know, I just started telling him all this shit he would tell me.
Like what?
Like, I had this, one of those, you know, those pow pow power wheels. Uh-huh. It was a quad version, right?
Uh-huh.
So I was, it was a motorcycle. It was either a motorcycle, cop motorcycle or a quad. I forget which one. Me and my brother had one. And mine broke. And he was like, I always thought he was going to fix it. He'd tell me all the time, I'm going to fix that for you. You're going to be back in these streets.
Right.
And never fixed it. And he also used to tell me he had...
going to be back on these streets.
And then he used to tell me that he would have... he had guitars in museums, which always stuck out to me. I don't know why. But that was all full of shit. He just lived in a camper in my grandma's backyard. Literally a camper.
That's a great lie. I have guitars of mine that are in museums.
I got some guitars in museums, you know. Like, I've never even seen you play the guitar, bro. Why do you have... And you have shit next to Lennon? Is that what you're telling me? Like, you and Hendrix in the same hall? How's that working out?
That's a great lie, because you're not going to go to museums looking.
I never went anywhere as a kid, except just, I didn't go anywhere that cost money.
Oh, that's great.
You know?
Making up shit that's in museums. Just. Then you got to look around the museum and read the little plaques. It's like a lot of work.
Yeah. And when you're seven, you don't really assume that you're going to start taking field trips to random museums that you don't even know exist.
Right. Picking out a state museum.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, he was full of shit. He was a shit. I mean, he still is. He said this funny shit to me this week. I mean, at Christmas, he's like, I bet you three Matter Daddies that you don't know the answer. I go, what? He's like, I bet you three Matter Daddies.
What's a Matter Daddy?
Nothing, son. Like, that shit is ridiculous, but it's so funny. And he totally got me on it. Isn't that corny as shit? But it's corny, that's some corny jail shit, I think.
What's a Matter Daddy?
It's like, it's right there. And no one's going for it, you know? I guess the more I get deeper and deeper into this, you know, a comedian in years of doing this, that the corniest
the
shit.
The worst shit makes you laugh
just
now.
Just kills me.
Yeah, it's funny.
When I said, what's a matter, daddy? And he goes, nothing, son. I lost my shit. That shit killed me.
When you're calling someone daddy in prison, it probably means something totally different.
Yeah, you know, he's just a small, yeah, that could be. That definitely, I never really
creepier
got into
joke
that,
in jail. Much creepier joke.
But also, I mean, can you imagine, you know, there's 15, 20 dudes just chilling in a day room.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody hits somebody with that. The whole place dies. Yeah. Dude, showtime. You're a star.
Have you ever been to a prison?
I used to work in a prison.
Really?
Yeah, Sheriff's Department, 2 years. Yuma, Arizona.
What was it, a high security prison?
It was a you know, county, which means right when you come off the street and you go to jail, you go to county. Federal is when you've already been processed and you've gotten sentenced.
So this is when people are still pissed off and I shouldn't be here and a lot of...
Yeah, a lot of drug, you know, a lot of small-time drug offenses, mm-hmm. you know, DUI shit, 2 and 3 DUIs. Nothing. But there's several units, you know, they break it down from like minimum, which is the green unit, to SMU, which is special management. You get your own cell, you ain't doing shit with nobody.
Right.
You know.
Anything scary? Did you see any scary stuff?
Oh, man, I got fights with prisoners.
You got in fights with the prisoners?
Oh, man, that shit gets wild in there. And I was never a direct reasoning for myself because I had very little conflict with prisoners because I was really cool.
Uh-huh.
But other dudes, like these guys with these power trippers, they just get in there, you know, they think that they're a real fucking sheriff. Like, you're a babysitter is what you are.
Yeah.
At that level. Like, you know, no disrespect to people who are doing it now, but it's a high-powered, you know, babysitting job.
Mm-hmm.
You're answering questions you're not, you know, eligible to answer because they all want to talk about their case. Like, do you think if I can answer legal questions, I'd be asking you, I'd be sitting here with you, feeding you these biscuits, bro? No, you know. But I got fired. I got a DUI. I got fired. But they were looking for a reason to let my ass go. But I was a maniac. I didn't belong in there.
They just threw you in with the rest of them. They're like, okay, he's here now too.
Yeah. Luckily, that never happened. But you know, that did happen. Fools get arrested. You'd be. You know, your coworker would be in your unit. That's wild.
That's bad. Then everybody else really must beat up on you because they're like, oh, now you're one of us.
You know, it was really awkward because people don't, you know, that's weird.
Mm-hmm.
For if you 1 minute you're on this side, the next minute you're in the cell.
Yeah.
Like there's just a weird look between you and another person, like looking through that glass. That's like this, when the circumstances take a turn for the worse for that person.
Yeah.
This kid I went to high school with, I played basketball with him, man. We used to go on road trips all the time. I played basketball all 4 years of high school. And in summertime, we play summer league. And in the other leagues, we had fall leagues. So you're always hanging out with these guys, you know? And there's, you know, 12 guys in a team. There's only three teams. So tops 20, 30 dudes
mm-hmm.
within the time period you play. I'm working in the prison, you know, a few years after high school, a dude comes in on some child molestation charges. And I'm looking at my clipboard because when you walk in, you got to go, you know, with the other officer you're relieving. You know, you got your roster of dudes and any issue they have, you have it all printed out,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I look, I'm like, this. I see the guy's name and I'm like, are you kidding me? I look up on the computer. I couldn't, dude, it's all over the newspaper. I couldn't believe dudes in my unit. I had him moved out because he was like, Lethal, man, what's everybody thinking out? I'm like, dude, don't get me in the middle of your shit, dude. You know, I didn't tell you to touch little kids, bro. That, you know, we played basketball together and we were good friends too. So even today, I can't listen to TLC's Waterfall. Because the dude loved the song so much. On road trips, he'd play TLC, Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls all the time. It's like all I think about every single time I hear that stupid-ass song is that this dude that I hung out with in high school basketball is a piece of shit. You know, it's a really bad connection.
Yeah. Wow. You've got these prisoners on the one side, and there's also this thing in your head where you're like, and it really relates to our philosopher in talking about morality and perspective. Because it must have really affected your perspective just knowing at any point I could be one of these guys, right?
One wrong choice behind the wheel, you know, like, and I got away with some shit by having the badge and having the out in the uniform, you know? I keep it in my car. You get pulled over. They see that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you know what? Get a car down here. Come get you picked up. Get you out of here, you know?
Right.
It'd be cool. Like, you can call a friend, you know, just leave the car here.
Yeah.
They wouldn't say shit. But it didn't help the last time I got it, you know, coming home from Mexico because Yuma, Arizona is right next to Mexico. So when you're a teenager in Yuma, Arizona, well, at this point, the 90s, mid-90s, you can really go do some damage, you know? And there's a place called Alcadones. So it's like a 5-minute drive from Yuma,
mm-hmm.
which is on the very, very corner, southwest corner of Arizona, connecting to California and Mexico. So you have to drive through like 2 miles of California to be in this little town in Mexico. And I got pulled over. I was hammered. It's $1 beers. You know, it's all day drinking. You just, you know, you go there because the border at that location closes at 10 p.m. So you got to get hammered and get the hell out before mm-hmm. 10 p.m. And I just came out loaded, kicking cones, doing donuts in the dirt parking lot. Just CHP just sitting back watching me. And that's why I got my DUI. You could have given two shits about the whole sheriff's department. I lost a job and I was actually secretly having sex with the hot classification chick, which did not sit well with higher ups.
Wow.
That this little young punk was tearing up the only hot chick in the whole building. Which it was her idea that I call and report and tell everybody what happened to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then, cause I probably could have kept the job. I think for a lot longer if I would have just not said shit.
You think she sold you out?
You know, I think so a little bit because we were fucking around, right? And anyways, like 3 weeks later, she just disappears. And then her and this other commander, this high up dude,
mm-hmm.
They both quit out of nowhere and moved. And they were done. So like, I guess I was the side guy and didn't realize it.
Yeah, she got rid of you.
Yeah, but I mean, she was like 24. I was like 19. So I mean,
she played dirty.
No one had ever blown me like that. So I didn't give a shit. I was hooked.
Yeah. She's like, I'll get rid of him.
But I'm glad now. I mean, looking back, like, I might still be in there checking dudes' names off, seeing who's on suicide watch and who, you know.
I don't think so. I don't think you'd still be there.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
It's interesting that your family moved around so much when you were a kid and you just kept moving.
Yeah.
Like, you're still moving around all the time.
There's definitely a connection. Just to keep growing, you know. But, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I would have been a comedian. I don't know if I would have been, you know, have that little fucked upness growing up, that
mm-hmm.
that stability, but still having some sort of instability.
Do you think about it much?
No, I don't. I don't question what. I try not to. You know, you can't. You. I don't want to always question what. I mean, I do think about shit like that. Like, what if I would have just stayed to one place, you know? But, you know, you can't question what you can't control, really, even though you really want to. Mm-hmm. Which, and then you combine weed with that, then you really start questioning shit and overthinking shit, so.
Moving around so much, it must have been like, it's kind of hard to get your bearings anywhere. You must have been pretty confused.
I think that's where the humor comes in, though, because humor's the, you know, it's the universal connector.
Yeah, but I think that's also why you didn't pick up on the fact, certain things, like the fact that that wasn't your dad and stuff. It's like, if you just keep moving, it's like,
yeah,
too much new stuff, too much stimulation constantly. Like, you were, it kept you distracted, you know?
Yeah, to really sit back and be like, all right, I look completely different because of a genetic reason, okay? Right. This isn't a generational thing that I happened to pick up Italian looks from my mom's side, you know, three generations back.
Yeah.
It's because a different man tore my mother up and then took off.
Tore my mother up.
It's, you know?
Such a harsh way to put it. It's like they just keep flashing different shiny colors in front of your face. And
here we go. Try this culture out. Live in Ohio. You know, have a lazy eye, crazy hair.
So having a lazy eye as a kid, were kids cool with you about that? Did you get messed with?
I got fucked with, yeah, definitely. I got messed with. I got, you know, a lot of the stupid shit, lazy eye, who you looking at? You know, they'll do this shit right here from behind me, like waving their hand in front of the lazy eye, like if I can't see them.
Can you see out of the lazy eye?
Yeah, I can see out of it.
So you're seeing two different parts of the room at the same time?
No, that's not how the brain works. You have one, you know, you have a dominant, that's what, go back to the dominant eye. Mm-hmm. My left eye is clearly my dominant eye.
Okay.
So that's what you look at. Like, I know it's over here, but you don't. Your brain doesn't have the capabilities to function in two directions at once. Huh. I mean, like focal pointing. You know, like this is. I'm fully in two different places at once, taking on the scene like two people. That's impossible. That doesn't happen.
Can you switch cameras? Can you go?
Yeah,
You can go to the other one. Let go of the dominant.
See
one.
It? Yeah. So now I'm locked in on your other side here.
Yeah. Oh wow. That's
so. It's like.
Yeah.
So like, if I cover the good eye, mm-hmm. this one, the lazy eye comes in. I don't
it
control
wakes
it.
Up.
You see that?
Yeah.
It just goes, all right, I better show up now.
Do you have to wake that lazy eye up every now and then? Be like, come on. We're not letting you.
No, I don't. He doesn't, you know.
Stay in practice.
Only when I'm forced, you know, if I close my good eye, this is the lazy eye, like, all right, I can do something around here.
Now, are there new procedures for lazy eyes? Do you think they'll ever?
Yeah.
So would you ever
get it fixed?
Yeah.
I'm forced to think of that question regularly, but I've never. I get approached by, like, after shows all the times. You know, on the tour, we'll go to, like, these rich places, you know, we're on tour with Gabriel, like in, like, the Hamptons. Mm-hmm. You know, we used to do this one run for, like, 2 or 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. So you start in Boston, a couple of shows at the Wilbur, and then you just work your way south down the coast, you know. And one of the stops from between that whole run, because there's obviously a lot of richer people there,
right.
Surgeons and shit like that. You know, one show, 3-4 different people in. And it was funny because they all had different methods of fixing it. One dude's surgery, one dude's non-surgery, one dude's partial surgery, one dude's exercises, you know?
Yeah.
And they talk about it like it's a like I'm a Cadillac with a busted headlight, you know? Like, that's an easy fix. Oh, well, thanks. It's been challenging me my entire life, but I'm glad you look at it like it's a blinker with a busted bulb, you know?
So you've chosen not to take them up on it?
Yeah, no. Hell no. I don't know. I guess I'm just not going to... I don't know. I guess it happens for a reason, right? Isn't it? I'm not religious, you know? I went through the whole religion thing for a long time, and I've kind of come to the conclusion that I'm not really... I think it's all a sham over mental control, you know, of the population. But there has to be some sort of, like, coding for destiny, whether, you know... Because, you know, they've recently found numbers in DNA, like, basically the Matrix. But the coding is that I was this guy that's meant to walk around the earth and, you know, share what I see from the stage with my fucked up perception of whatever this is with this eye and my lifestyle that I've, or my life in general to this point.
So you're saying that living life with the lazy eye gives you a certain perspective on the world that you don't want to lose.
Or this is just the destiny that I've been given, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a one in however many people with have lazy eyes, whether or not whatever happened, which I know it's genetic because when I showed up to that party, that family party, it's a genetic eye.
They all had lazy eyes?
No, it skips generations almost. Like my dad does have a weak eye, but he is not lazy. I have uncles with fucked up eyes. My grandfather has complete no pigmentation.
In the room of Mies.
Yeah, in the room of Mies. So that's when I knew, all right, well, there's no denying this. You know, this is very clear.
No DIing this,
all right? I see 40 jacked up eyes in this room, but they're all laughing and having a good time, and it's not really affecting them as far as their daily life, or at least anymore. The way that they were acting, like, they didn't, you know, you wouldn't have known. They weren't insecure about it.
Yeah.
They didn't let it. It didn't seem to be bogging down their life.
You need to have like a sign like lazy by choice. Like,
yeah, lazy by destiny, kept by choice, something like that.
Yeah.
Because I could have, you know, a lot of people, you know what's funny is that sometimes after shows, you know, I'll do my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, early on, my jokes about lazy eyes were all the basic shit, you know. I got to see a girl on the side or whatever those corny ass regular old jokey joke.
I like that you took it to the 1930s with the voice too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know how I used to do.
You know, whatever. Yeah, yeah, look, huh. Hey, I got one eye, one's lazy. Which means no matter how I look at you, it's the wrong way. Ho!
See?
I did that. Can't believe I did it on television. But now it's more about my perception on life with the eye. So it's much more unique in my actual feeling, or you know, my day-to-day, you know, explanation, or how it's what's really going on, as opposed to the shit that, you know, because people are always like, dude, I got a great joke for you, you know, they always want to give you lazy eye joke.
Maybe you can see who people really are by having that lazy eye, like, you know, the way people relate to you with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be a crystal ball type thing.
Yeah,
but some people, you know, what's funny is that I had a parent not too long ago apologize to me for fixing her son's eye. She's like, I feel bad. Like, I fixed his eye. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. You're really funny, and you make it like you really bring the bright side out of, you know, the positives of having a lazy eye. And I feel like I've almost betrayed him. I'm like, ma'am, not feel like you betrayed your kid for straightening out his eye, okay?
Ma'am, I can punch a kid in the eye right now. We'll mess that eye up again.
If I had a fucked up limp, all right?
Yeah.
I would want my mom to give me at least one shoe that has a thicker heel or something, right. You know?
Ma'am, I'm sorry for taking care of my kid.
Yeah.
You idiot, he could have been a comedian.
He could have been the next great lazy eye leader. You've ruined his destiny, ma'am. I just let everybody know I'm like the Obama right now of lazy eyes. Like, I'm our leader, you know, of lazy eye people. I'm our leader. People like lazy eye kids, like, look up to me.
Right.
You know, they love that somebody's making light of it in a positive manner and saying, you know what, fuck it, man. Something's wrong with everybody.
Yeah.
You know? Who's perfect here? Nobody. Yeah. So, you know, you take the hand you're dealt and you fucking play the hand.
And it turned out that his lazy eye was the one that saw things the clearest.
And here I am, 35 years later.
Thomas Reed lived from May 7th, 1710, to October 7th, 1796. Wow. 7th to 7th.
Wow, that's what the backwards ass medicines and non progression of the technological advancements.
Pretty decent lifespan, 86, in those days. And 7th to 7th. That's scary. I hope. I wonder. Would you? I don't know if I want to die on the same date. You know.
Well, I mean, it's not. It's pretty good odds. It's 1 in 31.
See, every time it's the 25th of a month, that means something to me because I was born on a 25th. But maybe one of these other numbers that I just go through every month that I don't care about at all.
I want to die late in the month.
Late in the month?
Yes. I want to die all the way up to the point where rent is due, and then I'm done.
Later, suckers.
If you die early in the month, if somebody shoots me on the 5th,
yeah,
you know how pissed off I'm going to be?
All those days that you could have lived rent-free.
I'm going to be like, dude, I'm going to be yelling at this guy. Bro, couldn't you shoot me on the... Have a little respect and shoot me on the 29th, you asshole?
You're assuming, of course, that you don't own by this point.
Yeah, either way, the mortgage. I could have used that money for those first 5 days. I could have blew off rent or the mortgage and just went anywhere with that money.
Right.
But
it's free money.
So,
unless reincarnation exists and you have to come back and work off that money before you're allowed to.
Well, that would only be in that theory, though. You'd have to follow up, be reincarnated as yourself in the same exact position.
No, you'd have to be reincarnated as anything and generate the money owed to the person for those extra days.
That's pretty deep, but I don't think that the landlord thing transcends through the reincarnation.
We'd have to look into Hinduism. Thomas Reed was a religiously trained Scottish philosopher and contemporary of David Hume. He was the founder of Scottish School of Common Sense. You know that's just like anybody who says something in that school, they're like, come on, use your common sense. This is a school of common sense.
I want to go there so bad. I hung out. I did a comedy festival in Oslo, Norway.
Yeah.
And I hung out with Kevin Bridges.
Oh, yeah. I love Kevin.
It was crazy.
He's come up on the show before. We've talked about Kevin. Yeah, I love Kevin Bridges.
Yeah, those guys are crazy, bro. It's a very blue-collar, very solid point of view. You know, their perspective on things is, you know, just don't go around fucking people, you know?
Yeah, it is a blue-collar thing. My mom is from Glasgow, Scotland, so...
You know, you're a stand-up dude, and that has nothing to do with comedy. I'm saying...
Thank you.
You know, you're a damn stand-up guy. You live... You know, your base morale seems... I mean, I don't know what else you got going on, but, you know, on the front lines, you're pretty goddamn solid.
Thank you, Sean. That's nice.
But you never know what's going on backstage, all right?
You don't know. I've got in the back room, there's just a whole bunch of... abused ferrets running an evil corporation.
Room smells like shit.
Cartoon ferrets. You need to, because they're always evil in the cartoons.
That's the perception that we have on ferrets in this society, and it's fucked up. They don't get a shot. They don't get a real shot.
And they all talk like this. Hey, the boss is coming. All right. The School of Common Sense, and he played an integral role in the Scottish Enlightenment. The early parts of his life were spent in Aberdeen, Scotland, and he graduated from the University of Aberdeen. He began his career as a minister of the Church of Scotland, but ceased to be a minister when he was given the professorship at King's College, Aberdeen, in 1752. He obtained his doctorate and wrote An Inquiry into the Human Mind on the Principles of Common Sense, published in 1764. He and his colleagues founded the Aberdeen Philosophical Society, which was popularly known as the Wise Club. Hey, it's just full of wise guys. You know, it's a wise club.
I like it.
Yeah.
This guy was committed to his craft.
Yeah. A literary philosophical association. Shortly after the publication of his first book, he was given the prestigious professorship of moral philosophy at the University of Glasgow, where he was called to replace Adam Smith. Adam Smith is the guy we learned with Bill Burr. We're picking up from there. He resigned from his position in 1781, after which he prepared his university lectures for publication in two books, Essays on the Intellectual Powers of Man, which came out in 1785, and the Essays on the Active Powers of the Human Mind in 1788. Reed was buried at Blackfriars Church in the grounds of Glasgow College. And when the university moved to Gilmer Hill in the west of Glasgow, his tombstone was inserted in the main building.
I would like to read his final chapters there. The intellectual, when you talk about his last two chapters for his lectures. He was 78 years old.
Yeah.
So that must be the real true wisdom of the entire situation he was even dropping as far as the perspective knowledge.
Yeah, you don't want anything from the younger years. You got
to hell no. I mean, this guy clearly seems to have the overall perspective of life. And so for him to be on his 80th year dropping knowledge, I bet that's some really nice reading.
Right. Yeah. I just think like that. I wouldn't want to be part of the School of Common Sense. I just feel like it's just a bunch of guys that just keep hitting you on the forehead, like, use your common sense.
Or they're just going to dig deeper and deeper to the levels that we have no idea. You know. All right, here's a paragraph by Thomas Reed, philosopher. Every man feels that perception gives him an invincible belief on the existence of that which he perceives. So that's all in the perception of the existence, right?
I don't know what he means by invincible, but...
It's an invincible belief, meaning I think what he's saying here is that because, you know, there's like also studies that say, if you think it, then, you know, that's one of my favorite quotes is whether you're right or you're wrong, you're right. You know, I think that's kind of what it comes down to. So if you really believe strongly in something, then there's no, you know, that's why Republicans are Republicans and Democrats are Democrats. Like, there's no crossing over. Like, you're not going to change my mind on this one.
Yeah.
This is my invincible belief, you know, on what I think. And this is what I think.
And sometimes people get too caught up in that and they just don't allow themselves to believe anything else.
Yeah, I'm always like, I have my beliefs. I have things I believe in and I have things that I think are the truth. But I also know that there's an underlining factor of the if, like, well, there's some shit I don't know yet, you know?
There's going to be that 45-year-old you who's going to...
Exactly. Here comes 45-year-old me talking to 35-year-old me, my bullshit-ass, you know, invincible perceptions that I currently perceive correctly as opposed to when I'm 45, I'm going to know. You know what? So that's why, so I always know that there's a foundation of, you know, you got to allow it to change and grow.
Yeah.
Instead of just being some asshole that thinks that, you know, dinosaurs didn't exist because they're not in the Bible.
Right.
You know? All right. So every man feels that perception gives him an invincible belief of the existence of that which he perceives, and that this belief is not the effort of reasoning, but the immediate consequence of perception. So that right there, I think he's saying is that that's a point of view minus research, and then without having the ability to be swayed or something, like, you're not going to take in more information and then change your point of view. You're like, you're stuck in, this guy's talking about, you know, people stuck in their ways. You're stuck. This is what your thoughts are this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why there was so many, you know, obviously that's one part of the reason why the 70s got so buck wild, because people grow up and they realize all that Christian bullshit that their parents raised them on. And, you know, like, I'm not saying that's, I'm saying, like, you know, from their point of view, the people who rebelled against the Christianity and, okay, you know, they explored themselves. I'm not saying that I think it's bullshit. Hey, you believe you, I believe me.
Right.
But I'm saying that those people in the 70s that did do complete opposite of what they were told to do as youngsters in the 60s is because they thought it was bullshit and they didn't have to believe in that. So, you know, all right, then we got, when philosophers have wearied themselves and their readers with their speculations upon the subject, they can neither strengthen this belief nor weaken it, nor can they show it has produced. It puts the philosopher and the peasant upon a level, and neither of them can give any reason for believing his senses than that he finds it impossible to do otherwise.
You can't really, like, convince someone with a rational argument who perceives the world differently than you with their senses. So it might make perfect sense to you, but the sense that it makes to you is based on how you take the world in. Basically, like, how your five senses have affected you to perceive reality. Everything that's logical and rational and based on research that you come to after that is going to be based off of that platform premise of, I see the world like this. That's not your choice, right? It might not be your choice. It might have to do with nature, or it might have to do with nurture, but it is the way you see this room. And then every assumption that you make about this room, despite what I tell you, is going to be also based on this room that you see. You're not going to see a different room that you're going to base it on.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, I think that. But also, I think that that's maybe a certain person. Not everybody. Because people are subject to changing. Like, I'm very, like, you're not going to change my perception on some things, but some things you can. So, you know, the perception on my father not giving two fucks, you know, but you think that, well, fathers do give fucks. Well, your perception is that fathers do, because, in, you know, as you've been perceived since you were little, that your father cared deeply, and there's no way in your mind that you can conceive that somebody would not want to be there for their child.
Mm-hmm.
Well, surprise, this perspective that I have a clear example of the fact that there's plenty of people out there that could give two fucks about a little kid and still live their life. And that, you know, I think it's like everything just gets dumped into our skulls, you know. It's like a big old pot of, like, a big ass stew of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's like everybody has their own stew, and there's a million ingredients per stew, and they're all individual stews. And then you get out, and the taste is the perception. So you pull that shit out. Well, this is what you take. This is my fucked up perception, because this is what I went through at a certain point. This is your perfect perception, which I might perceive as perfect because you grew up in a two-parent house, nice car, cul-de-sac, house, you know, family dinners, church, mm-hmm. you know, that type of thing. So.
Hmm. Different stews.
Different
stews, different views.
Different views. And, you know, if you had a choice, I'm pretty sure people wouldn't want to grow up being a jihad. That's their perception of that they need to do those crazy suicide bombings and shit because they've, you know, everything has been pumped into their domes, whether it be media, whether it be the sand and the fucking temperature, you know. And, yeah. I mean, every little thing matters, you know, how the dad was, how the mom was, the culture of how families are there compared to here.
Those are often anti-Jew stew.
You know, that's there's a million stews.
What about people whose lives are soups? Are there soup people too?
There's soup people. You know, there are soup people.
Mm.
You know, living a little more simple, less ingredients. Some of those fucked up little towns, there's some shit going on that people will never see anywhere else.
You know what those people are? Their experiences are chowders.
That's a chowder.
It's a bit clumpier.
It's a little bit thicker. A little clumpier. A little more bland. So
the majority of us are just stews. Then there's some simple soup folks.
And then there's some fucked up chowders. Some
fucked up chowders.
There's New England chowder. There's Manhattan chowders. You know what I mean? Then you got the gumbos. Let's not even talk about the, you know, they got gumbo
get
stews.
Into the gumbos.
That's a whole different deep thing.
It's great. That's really funny.
That's a base off of maybe due to some sort of marine life.
Yeah.
Like growing up in, maybe your dad was a fisher, you know, was a shrimp and boat captain.
Yeah.
You know?
do you want to read the quotes?
Yeah.
All right. Go for it.
Before men can reason together, they must agree in first principles. It is impossible to reason with a man who has no principles in common with you. So maybe that's why we have such an issue with the Middle East. We have zero principles. And this is maybe just on a political level, because I know that when you shut away a few layers of the bullshit and the money, and that there's like just little boys over there that want to go play in the yard, you right. know. They don't want to, it has nothing to do with clothes or surroundings. It's just imagination and life and just being a kid. So this obviously has some sort of, you know, as you've become, you've already developed your principles. So if you have, you know, their principles are developed, because obviously their principles are developed the way they have, ours are we are, and we are completely on the opposite page.
And that's why we don't see eye to eye.
Yeah, so I think that's what we got here.
Or in your case, eye to eye to eye to eye.
Or eye to eye to wall.
Eye to wall. In your case, eye to eye to wall.
If we have any evidence that the wisdom which formed the plan is in the man.
Wisdom that formed the plan, is that God?
Well, the evidence. If there's actual evidence of the wisdom formed, which formed the plan inside of the person, is that we have the very same evidence that the power which executed it is in him also. Okay, I think I'm onto something here with this one. On this quote from Reed, he's saying that if it was possible to prove that the way your wisdom is developed inside of yourself, as you know, and your plan, then you would also be able to show evidence that the power on which that plan is executed is in him also. So, you know, it's like the evidence shows that I created this perception. Well, then that same evidence would show inside of him that he executed that perception. I don't know. I'm thinking deeper than I assumed I would be thinking.
No, this is good.
It comes down to the person. It's like you have the strength to create, you know, this plan inside of you, and whatever the plan might be, the life plan or something. I'm assuming that that's an overall, you know, adjective for life, maybe, and your perception on things.
Mm-hmm.
So then your execution of that perception is mirrored by the, you know, that's the same thing. It's two in one.
Yeah, I guess so. That's a tough one. Yeah, it's a tough one.
I'm not sure how dumb or smart I sound.
I don't.
That's one weird thing I don't know. You know, you don't go to college. I don't know, and some other things.
Yeah.
Sometimes you know, maybe you don't really know how dumb you... That's why I'm always, like, paranoid to, like... And a lot of times I'll take shit down off Twitter, you know?
Yeah.
Not a lot, but, you know, sometimes. Because I don't know where I stack up with the masses, you know? Like, and how... And then there's always a fear of... Am I so dumb that I think I'm not even that dumb?
I think we all have that fear.
Am I that dumb? And then I put it out because I think that it's not dumb at all. But guess what? It was the dumbest shit I've said in years.
That's the same fear of, what about when I'm 40? What am I going to think about this now?
Man, exactly.
It's an insecurity in ourselves and in us. You know, I think we all want to know that we're right about some shit, especially as a comedian, and we're going up there and sort of like telling people our opinion. And you're like, well, what if my opinion's wrong? I get that feeling. Like, what if I'm wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And I think you just have to live in the moment. And just, that's what I've come to after all this. I think you have to just sort of trust yourself now and be okay with looking back and saying, boy, was I stupid.
Yeah.
You know, but because otherwise everyone would be quiet for history.
Yeah.
Like, you got to just make some noise at some point, and maybe you'll hit something on the head, you know?
That's why I love Joe Rogan so much. I mean, he has such an amazing, you know, he's just like, I'm envious of people who have the ability to retain large amounts of information. Like, I have my roommate, he can do this. Some people, like, it's a thing. Like, that's a thing.
Right.
I don't have the ability to rattle off stats.
Me neither.
I mean, I might have known them at a point in time, but they get dusty and I cannot pull them off the shelf.
Yeah, I believe it's all in there with guys like you and me who can't rattle off the facts. I think they're all in there and they do influence our opinions and our thoughts. And it doesn't make us any less right if we can't spit them back because they're in the stew.
Yeah, but you do sound much more intelligent.
Yeah, you can sound a lot more intelligent.
Like sometimes I hear some of these guys speak that I love listening to and I'm like, dude, I would sound like a piece of shit in a conversation with this man. I would literally, like, I would.
Oh, well, then that's,
you know, exactly.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah. My strength.
Your strength. You've got the power of the eye.
Yeah,
They don't have the eye. You got the magic eye, man.
That's one thing they don't have.
You know, we've all got our thing.
You know? Stephen A. Smith. No, I'm sorry. Stuart Scott has a lazy eye. Mm-hmm. Tracy McGrady. Steve Nash.
You're in the Lazy Eye Club. You're the president.
I know. Biggie Smalls, huge Lazy Eye.
Really?
Dude, why do you think he wears sunglasses all the time?
No kidding.
Go look at some of his... Dude, he got a mean Lazy Eye.
Mean Lazy Eye on him. Now, can you make it look like you don't have Lazy Eye by both, like, pointing them both the same way or something?
I can kind of do like a small version of eye crossing and it'll kind of go in.
Let me see. Oh, yeah.
But it looks weird. It's still, there's a weird factor to it.
But you could trick someone for a minute.
Yeah, but it's very blurry and I can end up getting a headache. So
Sorry for asking you to do it then.
No. I mean saying for long periods of time in order to trick somebody.
Okay.
So that's why it's never been done.
Fair enough.
Okay, well maybe this next quote seems like it might sum up exactly the fear we were speaking of not, you know, when you speak with one of these people that has the ability to retain and know tons of things. Third quote is, there's no greater impediment to the advancement of knowledge than the ambiguity of words. See, right now we want to open up Google and figure out what impediment means.
Impediment is like a speech impediment, like a...
Like a fucked up thing?
Yeah, like a fucked up thing. There's no greater, like...
So ambiguity. What's ambiguity?
Ambiguous, it's like vagueness. It's like...
All right, so there it is. I was scared that this kind of summed up what we just spoke about.
Yeah.
And we didn't read this first, but there's no greater fuck up to the advancement of knowledge than dulling down your ability of words.
Well, the non-clarity of words, basically, I think. Meaning,
you can't be the guy that pulls off shit off the shelf in the dome piece.
Well, I think it's more like if you don't know what a word means, you can't really understand something.
I think word in general, they're speaking on just, you know, words. Like, I don't specifically think the quote is defined as a word, you know, per se, only that one word. I think it's like the word.
But I also think it's kind of like how you didn't know the word ambiguity.
Yeah.
So like you cannot really clearly understand this quote without understanding that word. So that's like
So that means we're involved.
That's the impediment. Yeah,
it's the improvement of knowledge.
Right.
So we're the group of people that fucking slow shit down.
No, it's just like if you can't understand the word, how do you like understand the meaning?
Well,
I think
that's the point, though. Is if you don't have the ability to lock in definitions, for instance, like myself sometimes.
Right.
I mean, this is a 12 word sentence, and two of the words threw me off. That's roughly 19%.
Well, you're good with math.
Occasionally, yeah. Maybe a little lower, but...
Because I wouldn't even know what percent that is.
Well, I think it would have been like 18, I think. But either way, 18% of the words in this one little baby sentence I fucked up, which means if it was a paragraph here...
Right.
It would take me a while, hypothetically speaking, on this level of grammar and English writing. I would have been here for a minute trying to figure out some shit.
I think in a strange way, the things that impede you are also the things that make you stronger. For instance, like your lazy eye. Mm. It's made you stronger. It's why you don't want to get it fixed. You know, fixed.
Yeah.
Taken care of, sorted, whatever the word is.
Yeah. Repaired or whatever.
Repaired, adjusted.
Be considered, quote unquote, regular and normal.
It's because your weakness made you stronger. And I think that's what you got to remember. And with all this stuff, like the insecurity of never having gone to college. Because I went to college. It's not all that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it'll make you stronger. George Carlin never went to college. And I think that's why he wound up so educated. Because yeah. He was always trying to prove to people that he was smart because he didn't go to college. And he wound up smarter than all the people who did.
That dude's a borderline prophet.
Yeah. He was. He certainly was. And I think that's the advantage you've got. Our greatest weaknesses can become our greatest strengths.
Which I definitely am on board with, because that's almost the backbone of my act. You know, I talk about it like that, and the whole taking the good with the bad.
Yeah.
And just have a good time, you know, laughing, enjoying life, and, you know, seeing quirky observations.
Absolutely.
You know,
and turning the bad into the strongest good.
Mm-hmm.
The worse it is, the better it can be in some situations, you know? Just take your weakness. Like, I think being overweight, I've always felt like I got to prove stuff to people because I want to turn around their assumption of the fact, oh, he's fat, he's an idiot. So maybe that's been, in a way, my rebellion, which has made me take a negative and make it positive. So I don't know how much that relates to Reed, but we definitely got there through him.
Well, I think it relates to him extremely well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all perspective and how you see things. As I think almost, well, my half-assed assumption could, you know, generate from this hour of discussion and the small introduction that I got from him, you know, with the quotes and things, that it's all perception, you know? So yeah, this guy's pretty dope here. And you got me actually, I put myself on the limb here today. I don't know. I could end up sounding like the biggest butt fucker in the entire cast of your entire seasons.
So I don't think so, man.
I could end up sounding like the biggest asshole.
I think this was really great. I appreciate you being here.
Hey, thanks for the invite, man. I really loved having you chatting here with you.
Thank you. Sure. I loved catching up with you.
Yeah, man. We got to do some more shows like last month.
Yeah.
Get you back on that John Lovitz. Come out and have some jokes.
I would love to.
The show in Long Beach at Alex's.
Yeah, yeah.
Down there.
Well, you'll be all over the place. I know. I don't know when this will air, but I know you're always all over the place, as you always have been.
Well,
you're always on a man on the road, a rolling stone.
I love it, and I don't have illegitimate children everywhere, so I'm
right.
I think that in itself,
yeah,
makes my existence more positive than that which I've created myself.
Again, taking the negative and making it positive.
Twisting it up. You can travel around, have a good time, see life, experience, yeah, live, and not leave a trail of emotional and family destruction as you roll.
Well, it's nice. It's nice that I got some of that emotional family destruction, yes, here, sir, today. Yeah, I think your dad left some pretty decent emotional family destruction.
I'll take it. All the way to the stage. Good.
Thanks, man.
Thank you, Danny.
All right, everybody, that's our show. I want to thank once again my friend Sean Latham. I want to thank the good people at Drinkwell, drinkwell.com. Promo code MDP gets you 15% off. Go check that out. I want to thank Rachel Murray and consultmurray.com for sponsoring this week's episode. Go check out the new website, moderndayphilosophers.net. Make a donation, write an email, thecomical@yahoo.com. And please, please, if you can, go on iTunes and leave 5 stars and a nice comment this week. means a lot to me, and it goes a long way to help the show. Okay, everybody, stay positive. Fight the forces in the world that try to bring you down. Have a great week, and I'll talk to you next show. Goodbye, everyone.